Welcome to coaching session number 5. It's not that I'm unable to do it. I just haven't done it yet. When I first heard him say that, I thought it was brilliant, really. He'd been asked about some accomplishments that he had yet to perform, and it was evident to me that he was confident that he'd be able to do it. In fact, he seemed quite confident that he could do just about anything he wanted. Now, of course, I learned a long time ago that the "you can do anything you put your mind to" mantra, it's really nothing more than urban or suburban legend. Well-meaning parents use that phrase to encourage their kids. But, you know, I've often wondered if they don't really burden their children with an unreasonable expectation that can never be met. I encouraged my children to apply themselves and to work hard, but I also warned them that success isn't a right. And that's where I began to question the brilliance of his statement. Success was his right. I mean, he reeked with it. And you could tell, and I began to realize his statement could be both wise and foolish all at the same time, depending on the context and the intention. Here are some things that simply aren't possible. Number one, you can't always control what happens. Circumstances and situations arise that are beyond our control, and we're not able to do much about them other than react to them or manage them as well as we can. Now, most of us have known people, sadly sometimes people that we love very much, who are diagnosed with some serious illness. And try as we might, there's often very little that we can do other than to support them and serve them. We can't heal them, and sometimes neither can doctors. And we wish we could do more, but very often we're helpless. In our careers, we rarely are faced with circumstances that are quite that dire, but nonetheless, we can face circumstances that cause us high anxiety and grief. Number two, you can't control other people. When I was a young father and my children were small, I could control them. Well, as much as you can control a toddler. But as time rolled on and as they grew up, my control morphed into influence. I could no longer control them, but I could influence them. But I'm getting ahead of myself. People don't always do what we'd like them to do. They don't always behave as we'd like. Sometimes they don't perform as highly as we need them to. It's important that we understand the professional scope and the boundaries of our work. And that isn't to say that we're absolved of responsibility to help people, but we do have to come to fully understand the differences between controlling and influencing. It's impossible for you to control others at work. Ask any mom or dad of a toddler, and they will tell you that I'm crazy for saying that you can control small children. I never said it was ideal control. Number three, you can't always control the timing. Every professional wishes they had better command of their schedule. And that's especially true of deadlines, unplanned events, and emergencies. Things happen, and they happen on their own timetable, and sometimes it turns our lives upside down. And we might say or yell, of all the weeks, this would happen now. Time management is a universal problem like weight loss. Go into your internet browser and in that search bar. Well, better yet, go to Amazon. Go to Amazon and just type into the search bar time management and you'll get 121,807 results. Well, that's what I got. Enter weight loss into that same search bar at Amazon and you get 90,374. 121, almost 122,000 versus 90,000 time management over weight loss. Does that surprise you? It did me. Time management is a problem that very few people conquer, and everybody's got it. I mean, at best, we can only hope to have moments where our grip of our time is solid. Mostly, we feel like we don't have any grip at all. The impositions on our schedule, well, they cause us to use language, you know, that depicts how we feel. You've used these words, swamped, covered up, in the weeds, chasing my tail, running around like a chicken with my head cut off, buried. Those aren't productive feelings. And while we can all improve our calendar and our schedule, there are so many other people and circumstances that pull us away from our ideal. Then there are those unforeseen things, like an employee who suddenly resigns. You're blindsided and you think, oh man, not right now. But he's resigning and you can't do one thing to prevent it. It's bad enough you're losing him, but his timing couldn't be worse. And so it goes. Few things cause higher anxiety among professionals, in my experience, because this is one area where we're unable to increase the resource. You know, budgets, they can be tweaked. Revenues, those can be generated. Profits, they can be squeezed. But time can only be improved by using it better. And we're often baffled, how can we do that? Because we just don't have enough of it. But unlike these other things where we can increase them or decrease them, we don't have that kind of control over time. It is what it is. Well, what else can't you control? Well, these aren't the only things that you can't control, but it's just what I've identified as the top three. So feel free to consider others, but I think you've got the idea. You're a high-achieving professional, and that means you're likely accustomed to getting your way and having a high degree of control. And those aren't components, by the way, of high achievement. Rather, they're just common traits among high achievers in the workplace, and that's the problem. We tend to think that these traits are the why of our success, but they're not. Our success is determined by lots of things, like our professional competence, our willingness, our problem-solving prowess, our powers of persuasion and influence, our ability to build a team, and countless other learned or innate talents. Newsflash. You'll be increasingly frustrated trying to control things beyond your control. Stop it. Let's talk about some things that are possible. Number one, you can often influence what happens. High achievers don't tend to see themselves as victims. Most feel that they're determined people and the things they do, well, that's what gives them the outcome. Some feel that they have contributed heavily to the outcome, and some feel like they've contributed maybe a little bit less to the outcome, and maybe they were fortunate. The world is full of victims, though, who lament their inability to impact any positive change in their life. They lack that important mindset of a high achiever, and that is the knowledge that you can affect a positive outcome, that you make a difference, as opposed to, I'm just here on this planet and these other things happen to me and great things happen to other people and I wish great things would happen to me, but such is my lot in life. No, that's not how high achievers are wired. In short, you know that there are things that you can do to improve your success. Well, hey, it's why we're working together. Autocrats view themselves as the sun around which all other people orbit. They are the supreme commander of their life, and everybody else's too. Most often, they are deluded tyrants, but some organizations are ruled by such people, and some are even operating successful companies. I don't recommend it because it's not a great long-term approach. At best, I've only seen it work for very limited periods of time. Well, frankly, because people revolt or they quit. And because we're working together, you and me, I'm pretty confident you're not an autocrat. I'm pretty confident you're a high achiever. And even high achievers can sometimes lose sight of their own powers of influence, especially if they answer to a strong leader often bent on imposing their own will. C-level, that is corporate executives, sometimes find themselves feeling at the mercy of some hard-charging boss. Harold Janine was the famous tyrannical leader of ITT back in the 60s and 70s, and he would regularly reduce upper executives to tears with brutal grilling during public meetings. I'm not a fan of his style, but I'm a big fan of one thing that he constantly urged his executives to do, and it's a notable quote, and I love it. Managers must manage. I suppose that can mean whatever you'd like, but I prefer to apply it in the most positive way possible. You, the high achiever, must find a way to influence the outcome you want. When it comes to plans, goals, budgets, anything else that you measure, you must exert the proper influence to affect the results you seek. And rather than feeling that you're helpless to change things, I want you to accept the responsibility to influence things as much as possible. Build a strategy to get things done. You're a manager. Manage. That means you can devise a plan and a strategy to manage the workflow, the processes, the activities in order to get a more favorable outcome. Don't be a victim, even if the situation seems impossible. Manage. Number two, you can influence people. Acts of leadership involve people. Acts of management involve processes or the work, and we've talked about that in the past. However, you can't separate the two because people do the work. And so both components have to work in harmony if any organization is going to achieve their desired results. Great systems can often overcome a lack of greatness in people, and greatness in people can often overcome a weakness in systems. But, man, if you can couple great people with great systems, you've got something very special. You've got something extraordinary. Nope, doesn't happen that often. I'll be honest with you. It just doesn't happen that often. The reason? It demands remarkable effort. It involves more than that, though, because lots of people are out there working hard. It involves remarkable thought, remarkable strategy, remarkable execution. I mean, come on, if it were easy, everybody would do it. If it were easy, everybody would achieve remarkability. My work is focused on helping clients achieve remarkable status. Regardless of the nature of your work, two things are necessary in everybody on your team. A, competence. B, willingness. Now, competence can often be improved with training. Willingness can't. I don't have an answer for helping improve a person's willingness. For me, a lack of willingness is a non-negotiable standard. Now, some organizations are more technical than others, and so competence can often be more highly prized than willingness. And if you're in such a space, you'll likely relate to, well, a hotshot engineer or chemist who has mad technical skills but is very difficult to work with. I've encountered this in software, for instance. What they lack in willingness, well, they seem to make up for, so an owner or a manager or a leader thinks, in their technical prowess. Now, you have to judge those situations yourself, and you have to weigh the pros and the cons, but I know that you're often anxious with managing the work of a person like that because you may find yourself excusing or defending behavior simply because they have a technical skill that you highly prize. And so the question is it worth it? Well, only you can decide that. Well, unless your boss eventually overrides you and they decide for you. You can influence people in a variety of ways and methods, and sometimes it's ideal to have private one-on-one. Other times it's more suitable to address the entire group. Now, don't misunderstand the term influence for criticize, correct, or rebuke. And man, people get this wrong. When we say, well, we need to influence our team, they think criticize, correct, and rebuke. Now, some of the most powerful influences are praise. You know, by nature, it seems most leaders focus on the negative. I mean, the deficiencies just seem to leap out at us, and we instantly gravitate toward those things. You know, Junior, he walks into the house with a report card, and he's got 5 A's and 1 C. Where do you think most parents jump? Yeah, that's right. They go straight to the C, and they begin to question Junior, and they begin to ask Junior, well, what's up with this C? Man, you need to bring that up. I want to give you a phrase that is critical when it comes to you influencing people, and especially when it comes to influencing your people. Soar with your strengths. I know you've got team members who need, well, they need to correct some things. Everybody's got that. But I want you to focus first on their strengths. That doesn't mean that you avoid addressing glaring weaknesses, but it means that you avoid beating people over the head like Dad might. He might beat Junior up when Junior walks in with that one C, but he's got five A's. Okay, don't be like Dad. You get what you reward. There are a couple of challenges with that one. For starters, sometimes we think we're rewarding one thing, but really we're rewarding something different. The brainiacs over at Freakonomics, they've talked frequently about reward systems, including a link that I'll put here about paying kids for good grades. And it all just proves how difficult reward design can be. But secondly, sometimes the reward systems, they can create a new monster that we didn't see coming and one we didn't plan for. For instance, I'm thinking of a new commission system that could be implemented for a sales team, and it results in higher revenues. Problem? It lowers the profits. Or it brings about a spirit of, well, how much are you going to pay me to do that? Because they're accustomed to being rewarded for every sale. And sometimes they're asked to do things that don't involve a sale, but are necessary in the sales process. But they take the attitude, well, I don't get paid any commission for that. So it can be tough to correct those kinds of reward systems. You get more of what you praise. There's a recent Forbes article that addressed the reasons why nearly 2 million Americans leave their jobs, even in a time of economic uncertainty. And this was a year or so ago. The article cited a recent report. And these are the reasons that the report found that people were quitting their jobs. A, 31%, they don't like their boss. B, 31%, they felt a lack of empowerment. C, 35% didn't like the internal politics. And D, 43% lack of recognition. Now, that last one is the one that I want to point out. Well, okay, the first one, don't like their boss. That's pretty important, too. And, of course, you do realize that the last one, a lack of recognition, that can impact the first one. They don't like their boss. Maybe there's a reason they don't like their boss. The bottom line is people love to hear praise. So why don't bosses? Well, why don't you do it more? Because you don't think about it. Because you're always focused on the problems that need to be solved. Because you're afraid it'll make your people soft. Those are all pathetic excuses. So stop it. Stop it right now. Celebrate wins. Celebrate wins and you'll start experiencing more wins. It's the single biggest thing that you can do to elevate your team's performance. I know you don't believe that, but I'm going to challenge you to try it. What about your upward influence? Everybody needs a yes from somebody else. Now, maybe it's your boss. It could be an investor. It could be a financial partner. It could be a vendor or supplier. It could be a partner of some sort. It could be an internal or external customer. You need people to say yes to your ideas, your suggestions, and your plans. How do you do that? With influence and persuasion. You may be comfortable with the term selling, or you may want to vomit every time you hear it. And it doesn't matter because you must embrace it. And I don't care what you call it, selling, wooing, winning over, they all mean the same thing. You need to say or do things that will assist you in getting a yes from important people, people who can make or hinder your progress. Now, this is usually part of our work together because you won't be able to push forward without this skill, and it can always be improved. Number three, you can gain greater control of your calendar and schedule. Some organizations never have meetings. Instead, they call impromptu meetings during some random time when they're just absolutely necessary. Other organizations have meetings galore. I mean, they have meetings where they plan other meetings. They meet so they can have a meeting. Now, your organization likely has a meeting culture. And it could be the ever-popular standing-only meeting. Have you ever had those where nobody sits down because the organization wants to make sure the meetings don't drag on unnecessarily? Maybe your organization has a first-thing meeting culture where hardly a day can begin without a meeting. So what is your organization's meeting culture? Every organization has one. Resist the temptation to cooperate with the meeting culture of your organization if it doesn't suit your needs. For instance, I've worked with sales departments of very technical companies where the technical teams, and because it was a technical company, they would have meetings because it was necessary, it was vital to their workflow. But unfortunately, that meeting culture, because it was a technical company, that meeting culture was hazardous to the sales team. So while the technical team is meeting to plan and review their work, the sales team, they don't need to be meeting. They need to be busy selling. Meetings assist the technical people in solving their problems, but that same meeting culture is detrimental to making sales. And so you've got two groups with contrasting missions in the same company. They can't be best served with identical meeting cultures. When's the last time you really quantified the outcome of a meeting? When's the last time you really quantified the outcome of every meeting? And frequently I'll ask clients to put their meeting culture on trial for its life. And by making them justify the meetings, we are almost always able to eliminate some meetings, shorten others, and conduct some others with less frequency. Meetings sometimes become habits. You know, we get used to meetings. And so we just blindly, you know, we've met on Monday morning at 8 o'clock for as long as I can remember, they might say. And so we always meet on Monday at 8 o'clock. Well, why are we meeting at 8 o'clock on Monday? Nobody knows, but we've always done it. There are lots of wasted man hours in almost every organization with needless meetings and sometimes meetings that go on for too long. Sometimes it's not the meeting that's at fault. Sometimes it's the facilitator of the meeting, or it's a lack of planning and preparation of the meeting. If you're in 10 meetings a week, and you can manage to shave 6 minutes off each one, you just found yourself an extra hour. And as with most things, better managing meetings doesn't have to be an all or nothing proposition. Parkinson's law says work expands to fill the time allotted. When it comes to gaining greater control over your schedule, you have to be ruthless in planning, and you got to be even more ruthless in the execution. Have you ever constructed your ideal schedule ahead of time? Why are you turning red? Don't be embarrassed. You're in good company. Very few people have ever taken the time to do this. And you know why? We don't construct our ideal schedule because nearly everyone I talk to says, there's no way I can pull it off. I mean, it's just a waste of effort. Why should I even try? And so they resign themselves to the status quo without ever trying. I want to encourage you to at least give it a try. And I don't mean some weak effort once. I mean a consistent, concerted effort over time. Really try to make it happen. Change your mind, change your outcomes. Throughout these sessions, I've talked with you about this exploration. I've talked with you about point of view. I've talked with you about the mindset. And we could talk about a lot of specifics, but these sessions are designed to simply get you to think about what you do, how you do it, and maybe most importantly, why you do it. And I hope you'll open your mind and let these ideas percolate a while. Think about them, write down some notes about them, experiment with them, be bold enough to try some new things. Talk to you next time.